Hello, everyone. The previous finance panels covered traditional finance and alternative finance. Now it's time to talk about investments and opportunities. Our panelists here are Christian, who is the head of shipping at MPC Capital and CEO of MPC Container Ships. Tobias, who is the executive director of Pelagic Capital. And Nicholas, who is the chief investment officer of Tufton Investment Management. My first question to all the panelists is about the maritime sector that has faced a dynamic and unpredictable landscape in recent years. From your vantage points, what are the key factors driving investment decisions in the shipping industry today, and what are you and your groups focusing on now? If Nicholas can please start.
Thank you, Alexia. Thank you. Hi, everyone. Tough question today, because obviously with the environment that we are facing, geopolitics are playing a very important role in all investment decisions. As such, I think what is different versus what we have seen over the past 4 or 5 years is that we are very unlikely to be buying assets at the prices that these assets are at today without cash flow coverage. So I think all the things that we are looking at today expect a long coverage, long in today's environment, I would say 5 years. Sometimes this was considered short, but I think it is very important to buy coverage today with where asset prices are. And we, particular at Tufton, obviously have a diversified fleet in our portfolio, and depending on the investment mandates, we look at different opportunities. But we have been spending a lot of time over the past 6 months in LNG bunkering. So we've spent a lot of time on LNG, but have honed it down to LNG bunkering over the past, I would say, 6 months or so.
Thank you, Nicholas. Tobias?
So the Pelagic was formed as a joint venture between two shipping families, the Hartman family and the Albemarle family, that have invested for decades third-party capital for third parties into the shipping space, primarily on the equity side. I've joined the team to complement that as a credit strategy. And the benefit of a credit strategy is that you invest throughout the cycles and you're able to deploy capital efficiently and make equity-like returns throughout the cycles if you have the right clients and if you structure the products the right way. This is what I've been doing for 15 years, at first at Icon Capital and more recently with Fleetscape and Oaktree. And it very neatly complements the existing investment strategy, equity business of Logic.
Thank you, Tobias. Christian.
I guess from an investor's perspective, shipping doesn't correlate a lot with all the other asset classes or many other asset classes. And the different ship segments also do not correlate a lot with each other, as we can see every day now. Containers are still very strong. Dry bulk has corrected to quite a degree. And tankers are somewhere in the midst at the moment. So I think that's still very attractive. In MPC Container Ships, as the name suggests, we are focusing on container ships. And while prices may be elevated at this moment of time, you still have the opportunity to find very attractive charters, medium to long term, and significantly de-risk the investment and reduce the residual value risk.
Thank you. Christian, your company emphasizes creating long-term value and driving conscious change in the container shipping industry. How do you balance profitability with your mission to promote sustainability?
I guess we heard two panels earlier, and we may all complain at the moment about the regulation, about what's globally trying to be imposed on our sector, but also regionally, which is even more concerning. But all this regulation has also changed the way we actually deal with our partners, deal with our charterers, and it's a much more strategic and constructive dialogue, especially on the container ship side, which there has never been, which was different definitely in the years before. The point is that all of a sudden the operational profiles of our ships also really matter to the charterers, and it created a different atmosphere and a different universe in which we are actually mutually investing in our ships. Retrofits are very, very high on the agenda for everyone at the moment. And in container shipping, you have a situation that you can actually have the charterers co-invest alongside us in retrofittings of the vessels. And by, in return, or in addition, you get significantly longer time charters and coverage. I think the other element of that is obviously new buildings. That may be eco-new buildings, but in our case, for container ships, that's also dual-fuel new buildings. We have methanol dual-fuel new buildings. The first one's already delivered. They are, and they will be operating on green methanol. And you have a situation that with that technology on board as well, you can generate profitability and improve it, because we have 7 or up to 15 years of time charter against it. So you reduce the technological risk associated with certain fuels, but you can actually make the first steps. I appreciate it may be easier in containers than it is for many other sectors, but in offshore and containers, maybe also in car carriers, you have a very high predictability of trade routes, so you can actually invest in dual fuel ships.
Thank you, Christian. Tobias, with tighter credit conditions, how are shipping credit funds adapting to meet the financing needs of maritime businesses?
Well, I think the market is changing, and I think you will see a situation where shipping is moving more in the way that the aviation industry moved decades ago, where more of the capital need will be sourced through various financing funds and financing companies. It doesn't mean the banks are leaving. I think the banks will very much be part of the equation. But the banks are fairly rigid and will continue to be even more rigid in the way they lend. And the changing banking relations are forcing the banks into a situation where they are better off lending to shipping through institutional investors, such as yourself, than directly to a shipping company. That may not be fair, it may not be right, but that's the reality. What we can then do on our side is that we can be the flexibility. We can have that relationship with the clients and tailor the financing solutions to what they need. But we will effectively have to front or buffer the changes that are happening in the industry.
Yes. Thank you, Tobias. We have this trend has started already. So, Nicholas, as an investor focused on the shipping and offshore sectors, what criteria do you prioritize when evaluating investment opportunities in these capital-intensive industries?
So obviously, ultimately, investors and institutional capital providers of the likes of pension funds and sovereign wealth funds trust us managing their capital. The reason they do that is, number one, the return expectations they have and us having the ability to meet these returns expectations. In order to do so, especially in a highly capital intensive industry like shipping, counterparty is clearly a major element to consider. That's why we like LNG bunkering, because a lot of the oil majors are the ones that you're likely to be dealing with. Structuring of the investment is extremely important. So the likes of the previous panel that was discussing alternative finance, you want to optimize the capital structure of a single investment, obviously, could help out with things like that. And the operator that we choose to work with. Sometimes it's the charterer themselves that dictate who is an approved list of operators that you want to work with. And we have some trusted partners that we occasionally obviously work with, because we do the investments, we buy, we sell, we determine commercial strategy, but we don't run the ships ourselves. So I think all these elements need to come together in order to provide the expected returns that our end customers, investors expect.
Thank you, Nicholas. Christian, your approach leverages broad networks and analytical skills to propel change. How do partnerships and collaborative efforts with stakeholders shape your investment and operational strategies?
I guess first one I mentioned it already is obviously in the container shipping industry, it's strategic partnerships with the liners. We are one of the largest tonnage providers to Maersk with almost 30 ships. And that obviously provides a lot of opportunity on both sides. I mentioned retrofits and then securing longer charters. But it's obviously also the network around us, our company, our shareholders, stakeholders. We have a very large technical management set up globally together with the Wilhelmsen Group. We have one of the largest commercial managers in the container space, which is Harper Petersen, and a vast amount of investors in MPC container ships on the public side, but also on the private side in MPC Capital. And I guess all of these parties, all of these relationships really provide deal flow. We have recently in MPC Capital pivoted into the offshore space. And again, we've done it with a strong partner, smaller company in Germany, but they have the expertise to do it. They operate a fleet since many years. They have all the vettings. They really know this market, and they really know how to manage these ships. But when it comes to regulation, when it comes to questions being asked by the offshore wind park operators in Europe, then you have to invest in new vessels. You have to invest in new technology. You have to invest in new buildings. And that usually exceeds the capacity of the balance sheets of these companies. I wouldn't say they are not bankable, but there's definitely with the prices for new buildings these days and new technologies, there is significant capital demand, and that's what we like. So we partnered, we ordered ships together, and that's a mutual benefit and also significant pipeline ahead in these sectors because these companies are very, very experienced. But as we all know, new buildings are expensive, and that provides significant deal flow in the future. On the analytics, I think that you have to dig a bit deeper in certain sectors. We did that in offshore. We didn't order the very big ships. We ordered survey and service vessels. It's a niche. They have, as I mentioned it, they have DP2. They have unique features, and they can be operated carbon neutral. But the same applies to container shipping. Yes, it's a scary order book. We're all aware of that. And yes, there are geopolitical risks everywhere at this moment of time. But if you dig a bit deeper, you'll find that for feeder container ships, there are already 1,000 ships at the moment on the water older than 20 years. And that is, and if you combine it paired with the order book, which is super low in that size, we still think there is significant opportunity.
Thank you, Christian. Tobias, looking ahead, what trends in ship financing do you believe will shape the next decade?
Well, I think the biggest one is, as I said, the conversion of how the business is funded. The fund side, the institutional side, will take over more and more from the banks, and by that, capital will be a bit more disciplined than it's been in the past. That's just the nature of how things develop. There's an expected significant increase for capital. Or needs for capital going forward, both because the fleet is just growing, and if you believe that the IMO targets are going to be met, the energy transition targets are going to be met, there will be a significant increase in capital. So we're very optimistic. We're very excited about the future, and we think the institutional capital will play a significant role in it.
Thank you, Tobias. Nicholas, institutional investors seem to be increasingly focused on ESG criteria. How does your company balance sustainability goals with the need for strong financial returns?
So what's good with these conferences is that when we come back a year later and there's a frequency to them, we can compare probably notes with the things that we were discussing a year ago. So a year ago, there was heavy emphasis on ESG from all of our investors, whether those were related to existed capital that we had deployed or new investment mandates that we were seeking and discussing. Returns, obviously everybody wanted to do these type of, you know, greener projects everybody was discussing. I remember having side conversations here last year about methane, ammonia, et cetera, et cetera. One year, you fast forward, and everybody wanted returns above 10% unlevered, et cetera. This year, nobody really talks about ESG, at least to us, on an investor base, ESG. The focus has shifted. People realize that it takes a long time for these changes, significant infrastructure changes in shipping to kick in. Again, there's a lot more emphasis on the energy transition wording these days, and more focus on established strategies. But obviously, if you can reduce CO2 emissions, great, along with that. And people have come down on their expectations of returns. So last year, we were announcing that we had mandated new capital for investment opportunities in green investments, over $1 billion in equity. Over the course of the time that we've been working with this particular investors, both the green element of the investment has decreased. So there's always an element, yes, we are doing something good and we are reducing, but the risk-taking appetite on new technologies has decreased, and also the returns and expectations of investors have come down lower. And that is both on the asset basis, which is looking at these long-term cash flow projects, or there's the other side of ESG investors, and that's something where we're also spending time, which is venture capital and effectively new innovative solutions for the shipping and maritime space, whether hardware or software. There, you still have appetite on that side for ESG, but obviously because the companies that you're invested in are more nascent, the returns are, and the expectations that investors have are significantly higher. But so I would differentiate between ESG for assets and ESG for technology more and innovation on venture capital side of things.
Very interesting. Let's see what will happen next year. Christian, considering the focus on sustainable container shipping, what are the most promising technologies or fuels that you believe will reshape the industry in the next decade?
Maybe just quickly back to Nicolas. Sorry, no one
talks
about
this. Yes, if anyone wants to comment on
this. ESG topic anymore, but exactly these offshore ships I was alluding to, that really opened up pockets for us from investors which wouldn't invest in a classic ship. The investment in green ships or in ships which can be operated carbon neutral really opened up a new investor base for us, which is actually very encouraging. But back to your question, Alexia.
No, what returns do they expect, these offshore investors? What return do they expect this year? What return did they expect a year ago?
It's still double digit. But back to your question, Alexia. I think technologies, if we would have been sitting back to a year ago, I probably would have told you I'm not going to do a massive retrofit on a 20-year-old ship yet. Here we sit a year later and we've done it. And the reason is very simple. The reason is on container ships we have learned during the last year that retrofits can achieve significantly more than what initially was promised. We all know these desktop exercises and the reality very often is different in a different direction as well, more to the south. For container ship, the lessons for us at least was that it's actually much more. We have done a significant amount of ships with retrofitted propellers. We have retrofitted the ballast bows. And the combination of these things really led to savings in fuel consumption, but also obviously emissions of in excess of 20%. For some 3,500 TEU ships, even 75%, which is very, very significant. And I think that's a step, especially for the container ship fleet, which is very promising and also safeguards the investment and obviously reduces residual value risk of these ships. So to answer your question, these technologies for sure will remain. In terms of fuel and fuel, it's obviously always this chicken and egg discussion. We're all pointing to the others. The fuel industry says the ships need to be there first, and we as the owners usually say, you need to show us where the fuel is. I tend to say we have called the bluff with the first ships, dual fuel methanol, are in the water now. The fuel is being provided. I mentioned that example earlier. And now it's up to the shippers, now it's up to the cargo owners, are they willing to pay for it? The product is there. So we have, the commitment is there, the industry shows that it is actually possible. Do I think in our case it's methanol, that this is a global solution for the future? I doubt it. I think it's going to be, and we mentioned that very often here in these conferences, there is no one silver bullet. It will be a mix of many different fuels. Methanol for sure will play a role in niche trades. We have ships operating up and down the Norwegian coast. For these ships, there is green methanol, so that's a trade which works and the fuel is available. Globally, it will be much more challenging, although I've been in China 2 weeks ago and see what's actually being developed on the methanol front, on talking about green methanol, and it is really, really impressive, so there's a lot to come and watch the space. But globally, I'm still convinced that LNG for the next decade will play a very, very important role. Two-thirds of the order book in containers is dual-fuel LNG. And also ammonia, we heard it earlier, nuclear maybe a few more years out, but for sure will also be very relevant. So it's a mix. We are agnostic, but we have to start somewhere.
Thank you.
Could just follow up on that. I think at the end of the day, the decisions regarding the future fuel needs to be taken by shipping companies and ship operators and users. I think we often make a mistake if decisions on this are made in tall buildings in New York or London. We often make the wrong decisions. So we need to take direction from the industry and not from the financing point of view.
Thank you. Tobias, given your unique position as a lender, how do you view the role of private credit in bridging the funding gap for small to mid-sized companies?
I think I've talked today about how the industry is changing, but one thing that will not change is that at the core of it, shipping is a relationship business, and I think it has to be long-term, which makes it different than aviation, right? We are here to solve unique funding capital needs of shipping clients and tailor those solutions. And we can do that because we are fund managers. We're not as regulated as other capital providers to shipping. And I think that's the key. That's the key. We can be that flexible relationship partner. Are you providing debt? Are you doing equity? Are you doing something in between? And be a discussion partner as capitals are developed.
Tobias, are you focused in particular jurisdictions or?
No, we're worldwide, and also we are flexible on sectors. I think you have to again follow where the customers are moving, and what sectors are relevant at the moment. If you force me, I'll tell you exactly what I feel about almost every topic on the planet. But I shouldn't be the one driving it; it should be the customers, and we follow them.
Thank you, Tobias. Nicholas, what role do partnership and joint ventures play in your investment strategy, particularly when entering new markets or innovative sectors?
So, when we look at new markets and new sectors, we always follow a sort of top-down analysis. So we start with macro, global impact, demand, supply, and then we slowly get to more detailed on the players and the market participants, stakeholders, etc. So we, although traditionally we have owned 100% of the investments that we have made, we are always open to joint ventures and partnerships with players that have value to add that we do not. And obviously, in a new market, it makes a lot of sense to partner with an established, whether that's an operator or a financial investor, like my colleagues here, who has done it before, and who has different relationships that we do not have, who has the knowledge, expertise, and we have, you know, from not having any participants, investors in some of the industries and investments we've made, we have also, you know, up to 50-50 JVs with partners that, you know, can bring something to the table that we do not have, because we, you know, nobody has it all, or some people think but they don't. But we definitely don't. So we, you know, we are open to partnering, and especially in new markets, because in shipping and offshore that Christian talked about, the capital requirements are significant. So you don't want to get it wrong. And we've seen it over and over again with even some of the most astute investors from this country entering sectors, you know, offshore drilling would be one of them, for example, many years ago, you know, believing that as an adjacent market to shipping, because the drilling platforms could move, someone can make the same returns, but you can quickly lose a lot of money. And that was the case with, you know, ordering drill ships. I remember the time 12 years ago for 800 million each, and then 1 year later laid up, not being sold for even 60 million. So yes, I would have made sure I would have partnered with someone who knew the industry as an entry to that new space. I think it's paramount.
Yes. Thank you. I remember that period as well. And yes, partnerships are important, and with experts on the specific field that you want to invest in. My last question is for everyone in the panel. So Christian, you can begin when, and then Tobias and Nicholas, and hopefully we'll be on time. So, Christian, if you had to highlight one major opportunity and one key challenge for maritime investment in the next 5 years, what would they be? If we have time, you can say two if you want. One or two.
I mean, the first one is obviously for everyone, and especially in essence, no surprise, is the volatility of the market, which is a great opportunity for everyone. If I have to mention another one, then probably refer to what I mentioned earlier. It's then the decarbonization. It's different in the sectors, fully appreciate that, but it still can drive investment, can open up new pockets of capital, and would definitely count it as a major opportunity for the next 5 years, if that's the time horizon we're talking about. Challenge, it's amongst all the geopolitical issues. I guess the industry has a lot of challenges ahead, but one which is, and I see all the people from the different ship owners association here in front of me and BIMCO, I think what's really going to be a challenge for us is this regional regulation at the moment. We see more and more, and all of you are aware, we heard panels this morning about FuelEU, etc. I appreciate that without regulation, that's not going to be a lot of progress here on the sector and in certain investments, but it needs to be global. I know it's on the agenda of many these days, but we need a global regulation, and we cannot work in different regimes, which is at the moment, it feels at least to me, is growing, and that's a challenge for all of us, I guess.
Thank you, Christian. Tobias?
Well, I think the greatest opportunity for us, at least, is that we are seeing a tremendous amount of capital, a tremendous deal flow in capital indeed, and way more than we can handle, which is a good thing. So I'm very excited about the future. In terms of what concerns me, the best thing that can happen to the world and the worst thing that can happen to shipping is global peace and global prosperity. That's just the reality. It doesn't look good at the moment, or I guess it doesn't look good for shipping. The world looks very the future looks pretty bleak, which means that shipping will do well going forward, fortunately and unfortunately.
Interesting view. Nicholas.
I think if one was to think from us as investors in the space, the biggest challenge is the fact that a lot of people made a lot of money over the past few years, which means that there is, number one, a significant amount of capital in the pockets of people who know what they're doing, which makes investment opportunities, good investment opportunities, very competitive and hard to find. It has attracted a lot of attention, so that's good for what we do because we can raise more capital to make more investments, but obviously there's an adjustment to the returns because of that. And I think in general, that is clearly something that will always be a challenge on finding the right investment opportunities. Obviously for us, interest rates matter, i.e. inflation matters. And where that moves, we've been seeing a trend towards rates coming off. Obviously, we all understand in this room that shipping rates, high shipping rates, do have an impact on the prices that consumers pay ultimately and inflation. And when it comes to where investing the next 5 years is obviously a very difficult question to answer today because, you know, a week ago, based on what we were hearing on the geopolitics side, on the other side of the Atlantic, we would have said one investment opportunity. 3 days later, we were talking about a different investment opportunity. I think the one place where we definitely see good value and investment opportunities we haven't really talked about is the discrepancy between public market company valuations today. So we as Tufton used to be 5 years ago, we separated, but there used to be Tufton Oceanic. There was the element that was effectively a hedge fund and investing in securities, public securities, and the asset-backed business, which is what is called today Tufton. Given the expertise, we are planning on forming vehicles, and we are looking at making investments into public companies today because we definitely are of the view that with the discount to NAVs that we see, and some of it, and we currently have two publicly listed companies, but both are public companies, probably the best investment opportunities today are public companies with well-run and proper solid corporate governance in place, and there are, we think, today, a lot of opportunities for very good returns if someone is to invest in some of these public companies today.
Thank you, Nicholas. Thank you, everyone, for your insights. That was a very interesting discussion. If anyone wants to say anything else, we have 2 more minutes if anyone wants to. Something that was not covered, you think?
Yeah, but people are hungry, so you know how it is at this time.
I'll say one thing, that shipping, and we have to remind ourselves, shipping is an uncorrelated industry to pretty much everything else. And even within shipping, we are uncorrelated between the shipping segments. So as the rest of the world seems to be falling apart, there are going to be tremendous investment opportunities in maritime. You need to keep that in mind.
Thank you. Yeah, of course. Mr. Bornholz would like to...
So I think, as I perhaps just touched upon this a little bit, clearly we are of the view that today the public markets are putting an even bigger discount on shipping companies than, again, one was to track last year, the years before. So the amount of capital raised by public shipping companies in the recent 12 months plus is very small as well. So this time right now, it does feel that the dilemma and the question of public versus private is one of the easiest that has ever been, because it definitely shows that there's not a lot of benefit of running public companies today and facing all the scrutiny, all the requirements, the costs, etc., and not getting premium to NAVs, which is primarily the reason why shipping companies, in our opinion, should list and exist.
It's also a function of scale. I think for all public markets, not only shipping, size matters. And the challenge with shipping is that not a lot of shipping, public shipping companies are large enough to justify the premium.
Can I ask also a question? Since we have 29 seconds. So if you, you know, for a Greek ship owner, we are now at the, in Greece, what the advice would be, where he should or she should invest when it comes to, you know,
us to tell the Greek ship owner where to invest? I think it should be the other way around. They should be telling us where to invest. I know they invested in these guys, one of them. He bought, you know, 75% of their company. So they should be telling us where to invest, not us, them.
So it comes back to what you said about, you know, having the right advisors and partners and forming joint ventures with people that, you know, with companies that know what they're doing. Thank you very much.